Four's Company on this Saturday morning, 102.5, 106.3. The game, we've got the whole crew back together. Had a fun special edition yesterday, filling in for Jared Stillman from 2 to 6. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Nick Kieser, the soon-to-be-married Nick Kieser, is back in studio, and Connor Newt back behind the glass. Excited for this one, guys. Show 2 of 3 on Memorial Day weekend. Again, if you didn't tune in yesterday, we will have a special edition of Four's Company coming up on Monday, Memorial Day, 11 to 2:30. Excited for that as well. Gentlemen, how are we doing on this Saturday morning? Nick Kieser, I know you had some wedding festivities last night, and then the big day is tomorrow.
Yeah, so we did our rehearsal last night. We had dinner with family and friends, and it was fun. That was as real as it'll get, obviously, and I may or may not have almost cried the first time I saw her come down, so that was fun. But yeah, call me soft, but no, it's a big moment. So I never am too emotional, but I did catch myself a lot yesterday, like, hey, this is getting real and things like that. All week, people have asked, are you nervous? And it's not really nervousness as much as it is excitement and knowing that it's the best person for me, right? So that's the way I've looked at it the entire week. And most importantly, it's so easy for me to come in and talk about things that I'm familiar with, get a couple hours to myself with you guys, but also just to kind of get my day started doing something I love. So this weekend's been fun. It's a good holiday weekend. It's good to see you guys. You sounded good yesterday. I was getting my hair cut, and I saw you guys had started getting on air yesterday. So, yeah, I'm super glad to be here and for a couple hours, but you guys have Monday as well. And, yeah, this weekend is everything in a box that I never could have imagined that was here, but it is.
I'm pumped. I'm pumped for him specifically. I told him, like, all this week, talking about being nervous. I was like, so what, the butterfly's starting to churn a little bit? Like, what are you feeling like? I'm good. I'm golden. Like, not even worried about it. Sure enough, this morning, I was like, yep, he's probably going to feel some butterflies. And I was going to make a joke, but I was just holding it to myself. I was going to say,
what's your joke?
I was going to say, like, what were you crying more about? Seeing your future wife or the bill last night after dinner? One of the two, right?
So the bill, we've split things up. We've paid for a lot. So last night was courtesy of my madre. So that was really nice. We went to a nice restaurant on the square in Franklin.
Awesome.
So, but no, it was more about the moment and Kristen, for
well,
sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Congratulations to you, bud. This is going to be an awesome event.
Well, thank you.
Yes, congratulations, Nick. We're going to spend a whole segment on Kieser's wedding coming up in the 10 o'clock hour.
I cannot wait.
And that brings us to our question of the day. We want to hear your marriage advice for Nick Kieser. You can text or call 615-737-1025. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So,
and be nice.
If you have any... Yeah, be nice on the text line for Nick Kieser as he gets married tomorrow. So what marriage advice, wedding advice do you have for Nick Kieser? Again, text or call 615-737-1025. We're doing a lot of headlines this weekend, guys. Do we have headlines? Nick Frazier, Nick Kieser? Nick Kieser didn't get to do one yesterday, so go ahead.
Yeah, so I was really interested in what Tim Corbin was saying this week, and he kind of sounds like he's used to this success. But when he was asked more about what it means to get this far with this group, that's what he was gushing about, was that this group has persevered through so much. So the thing that's impressed me the most this week has been Vanderbilt baseball. And I mean, think about it. They went into the SEC tournament with, you know, a lot of pressure. And, hey, can these guys make it back to Omaha? Can these guys show this conference what they're made of after having a disappointing end to their season? So that would be something that stands out to me just based on this entire week for sure. And remember last week, I saw Scottie Scheffler and all of that debacle too. So I had to tie that in there. I don't know what you guys thought of the video that came out. But that was another thing for me last week I was experiencing with my family because we were there in Louisville. So, yeah, that was something that stood out to me this week was Vanderbilt baseball. And then, obviously, talking about Scottie Scheffler's video that came out yesterday. So, interesting. Don't agree with any of the charges whatsoever. So if you know what I'm talking about, it's crazy. Someone passed away as well. So that was crazy last week. They got hit by a bus. But yeah, things have smoothed over in Louisville and it's moved on. But yeah, Vanderbilt baseball. I don't know what you guys hit on yesterday for your headlines, but I'm curious to hear what you got now.
Wasn't that, but I'm actually going another way.
Okay.
I'm going with MLB baseball.
Oh, okay.
You know, yesterday the Cardinals and Cubs got rained out. I actually chatted with, you know, Jake and Connor about this, but, you know, Jack Buck and Harry Carey, you know, they
Joe
were
Buck.
In, no, hang on. Back in the day, they, you know, did the same booth together. Now it's Chip Carey and Joe Buck. So, I mean, that'd be kind of cool to see a little history lesson in the booth. So, obviously, didn't get to see that last night because they got rained out. They are rescheduling that game for July 13th. It'll be a doubleheader. Not sure if they will be on the call then for that game or if it's just going to take place today. But I'm really looking forward to whenever that happens. So, that's kind of my big headline.
Yeah, it was disappointing when Joe Buck moved over to ESPN that he wasn't going to do baseball anymore. I'm not saying he has to do the World Series. I think Joe Davis does a great job on the World Series, but I'd like to see Joe Buck on baseball just every once in a while.
Yeah.
Just pop in there.
It's refreshing.
Yes. He does a good job.
Yeah, it's like you go out on a sunny day, get some lemonade, and you sit out back like, oh, let me put some sweet tea in here. Make a little Arnold Palmer. That's what you're feeling with Joe Buck. Just like, a little refreshment.
I quickly have a headline just off of that. I have another one that I want to get to, but on Thursday night, I've mentioned many times, I follow the Detroit Tigers, and I was trying to watch their game against the Toronto Blue Jays, and none of the streams were working. And I check on Twitter, the entire truck compound for all of the broadcast trucks had lost power.
No
way. Right at first pitch. And they never got all their audio stuff back, so they ended up, Jason Benetti, who's the Tigers broadcaster, he does Fox national stuff
yeah.
too.
Yeah, yeah.
They were calling the game into their cell phone, so the audio sounds all muffled. It was really funny to watch because I've had to do that before. There have been games like on radio when my equipment doesn't work and you have to literally call into the phone line
yeah.
at the radio station.
We know what that's like
and,
here.
And call the game through the phone line.
Wow.
And I'd never thought that would happen on a TV MLB broadcast.
That's like COVID all over again.
Yeah. So man. That I just wanted to mention that as kind of a funny MLB broadcast thing. My headline today, I'm sorry, Vols fans. I got to come after you a little bit here.
Oh.
I got to come after some Tennessee fans here.
Connor.
I've been seeing on Twitter, so the SEC Player of the Year was announced in baseball this week,
right.
And it was Charlie Condon.
Right.
And I mentioned it yesterday. I know Charlie Condon. I called games for him in a summer league one time. So there's my bias here. But I've seen Tennessee fans saying that Christian Moore got, quote-unquote, robbed of the SEC Player of the Year award. When Charlie Condon just put up maybe the greatest offensive season in college baseball
Absolutely.
History. Absolutely. Now, Christian Moore has a great case to be made. He had a great resume. He had 20 home runs in SEC play, same amount of RBIs as Charlie Condon in SEC play, and a higher batting average. But that's taking into it, they're not taking in any context where Charlie Condon got walked 25 more times in SEC play than Christian Moore did, had a higher OPS, and same amount of RBIs, one less home run. So the counting stats are marginally different, but all of the advanced statistics favor Condon, who just had the greatest offensive season in college baseball history.
So what have you seen people whine about here?
They're saying that Christian Moore was robbed of the SEC Player of the Year award and that Charlie Condon didn't deserve it, basically.
Well, but based on what merit? I mean, clearly they both had great seasons. And who votes on this? Do you know?
The coaches.
Okay. So there's no reason to whine about this.
That, and the coaches, based on how they talk about the two players, I feel like it's no contest.
Exactly.
I forget what coach it was. It might have been A&M. Said that was asked, how do you attack Charlie Condon?
Uh-huh.
And they said, he said, throw it to the backstop four times.
Oh, I've seen that. Yep.
And hope you can get the next guy. so that's all I've got to say. Vols fans, I see it sometimes. There's just a little delusion in there sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I saw another one.
A little.
I saw another, I think it was 2 weeks ago, where there are Tennessee fans still thinking that Michigan gave their playbook to South Carolina in the game that they lost where Hendon Hooker got hurt.
Mm.
I mean, it's full-on conspiracy theory. we have a new friend here at the station, Jake, who's a Vols fan, back behind the glass, who's nodding and saying that he believes that. So, I'm just saying, Vols fans, just take one step back, just rationalize the situation a little bit more. Charlie Condon had the best season, at least in the last decade, of a college baseball hitter. Let's give him his flowers. He deserves
it. Yeah, no, absolutely. And quickly, too, before we get to Connor, I have enjoyed watching the Stanley Cup playoffs. I'm biased because obviously that's the sport and the league that I cover. Last night's game was no exception either. That
awesome
was a
game.
Really fun game to keep track of last night. So, Connor, what is your headline for us this morning?
Yeah, we kind of talked about that yesterday, how the NHL is – the Stanley Cup playoff is kind of overtaking the NBA
it is.
Right now.
Yeah.
But my headline is – in the world of wrestling, today,
of course it is.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to spend a whole notes segment on this one. Just a quick hit. Today is King and Queen of the Ring, a pay-per-view event live from Saudi Arabia. Actually, it'll kick off at about noon, so just shortly after we get off the air. Randy Orton is competing against what's his name, Gunther, for the title of King of the Ring, which is a tournament to decide who gets a championship opportunity. Here's a weird one. Cody Rhodes is defending his title against Logan Paul. Yeah, that Logan Paul.
Wasn't there a whole like lawsuit kind of thing? Or like they were staging something where they signed this contract
and stuff? Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like they both of them are champions. So Cody Rhodes is the big guy, the big champ. And then Logan Paul is kind of a mid-carder. So he holds the United States championship. And it was a whole stage thing. Like, Cody Rhodes was like, I don't have to defend mine. You just have to defend yours. So they brought in, like, a, quote, prime lawyer because his whole character is he's a businessman and he's prime and all
he's
that.
He's prime.
But, yeah.
But he's not Coach Prime.
No.
Speaking of which, his son's having some financial issues.
I saw that.
That is true. Do we have some nutrition this morning?
We do.
Oh,
right. We skipped nutrition.
Oh, yeah. That's okay.
Oh,
it's
no.
No. What's on the list today for nutrition?
So this morning I got here at 6 in the morning. I had to work the morning shift today.
Beautiful. Bless your heart.
Bless my heart, yeah. I threw in some blueberry Eggo waffles into the toaster before I left.
Ooh. Absolutely.
And I threw them in the microwave earlier, about 30 minutes ago, and scarfed them down before the show. They were kind of soggy, so... Nothing great from nutrition today, but
soggy just like Nashville this afternoon. Yeah.
Yesterday was great. We didn't talk about it yesterday, but yesterday I had scrambled eggs, toast, and a peach for breakfast.
Oh.
My mom made it for me.
Wow.
It was great.
How about that?
It was awesome.
Yeah, we did skip nutrition during Stillman & Company yesterday. I think we wanted to play to our audience.
Yes,
they cared more about the Titans than what Connor ate for breakfast. Thank you, Connor. Hopefully those blueberry Eggo waffles were good. We do need to get a theme song for nutrition.
Yeah.
You were singing one there. Maybe we can make a little jingle.
What's for nutrition? I don't know. I'll think of something.
We need to think of something that kind of sounds like Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with it.
I can see that working out
involve
very well.
Involve the Cookie Monster cookie. Newt eats nutrition.
I don't eat cookies for breakfast. So
I mean, some people do.
Almost exclusively yogurt.
And
sugary
waffles.
Almost. I changed it up the past
Yeah, you did
few
change
days.
It up.
There are breakfast cookies out there, Newt.
Yeah, I guess.
You get those little Biscoff cookies?
Yeah.
Or like the protein cookies or something like that.
The ones that women eat before they go to the gym?
Yep. Those ones.
Everybody can eat those. What are you talking about?
Velveeta's good. I love me a Velveeta.
That's what I'm talking about. Velveeta.
Yeah,
those are actually really good.
I thought you said Velveeta for a second.
No,
I was like,
that's
eating
cheese.
Shells and
not
cheese.
Cheese.
Velveeta's for everybody, baby. I mean, hey, I love me some good cookie, especially with a nice little hot cup
of
coffee as well.
Man.
All right. Well, it's only 9:14. We are already off the rails here on Four's Company.
Expand your horizons, ladies and gentlemen.
Coming up next, Nick Kieser wasn't with us yesterday, so he didn't really get a chance to fully break down the Ryan McDonagh trade earlier this week and what it means for the Preds offseason. So we're going to talk a little Preds, let Kieser give us his reports. The reporter is back in studio with us. That's coming up next here on Four's Company, starting off your Saturday morning on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Charlotte Knights at First Horizon Park. Pre-game at 6:20, first pitch at 6:35. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 949thefan.com. Sounds Baseball on 949 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Force Company on this Saturday morning. We're off and rolling. We already kind of got off the rails in segment one. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Nick Kieser at the desk, Connor Newt behind the glass. Kieser, we talked a little bit yesterday when we filled in for Jared. We talked about the Ryan McDonagh trade, what it means for the Preds, and kind of where Barry Trotz can go from here this offseason. But you're our Preds guy. You know way more than we do. We gave our thoughts. We wanted to give you your platform to talk about the Preds and where they go here after moving
sure.
Ryan McDonagh.
Yeah, well, a quick story on that. So when I was on the way to pick up my wedding suits, it was right before noon, and I knew something was kind of coming just with given, hey, might want to be aware of meeting later. So then it was, okay, hey, McDonagh has been traded back to Tampa Bay, and I was in the parking lot about to get my suits or about to pull up, and I didn't even go in. I went ahead and started driving to go meet with Barry Trotz. So there was that. My initial thoughts on him being traded back to Tampa Bay, and I have to touch on it this way because I had someone in my family call me and ask me about it this way, and it doesn't happen often here with this franchise. He asked for a trade. He asked for a different endeavor in the point of his career that he's in right now. And so I don't blame him for thinking that way. Think about it. Two Stanley Cups, over 190 playoff games, played about 200 games now for him in his entire NHL career. And I think what's most important for him is he's thinking of his family. So they know in the back of their minds they were at their happiest in their lives in Tampa Bay. That's not to belittle what, you know, his reputation was here in Nashville or what he was able to do here in that time frame. But think about it, too. The only time he missed the NHL postseason was last year. So for him, he has a high standard. And there are high standards in every sport. But, you know, he knows for himself that, okay, I've wanted to make it and win as much as I can. And to his credit, he's done that more than most defensemen ever have. And so it's good for him that he's had that much playoff success. And when they had the end of season meetings, you know, that's where you have to dive into, hey, this is our vision for the team the next few seasons. And I'm sure Ryan felt that that wasn't completely for him. I'm not speaking directly for him, but just imagine being in his shoes where you're in the first round, you lose to Vancouver. This team's not getting any younger with some of the skaters that are present. So he understands where his money and where his talent best be used from now on. So that's the way I look at it. It sucks to lose that person because we know that even as media members, to see him in the room and the way that he interacts with the guys, the way that he is coaching some of them on the bench and what reliability he brings to this entire team. The clutch ability is what Barry Trotz and Andrew Brunette talked about regarding closing out games with him. He's going to be a huge asset missed. And I know that there's been a lot of talk about replacing a guy like that. You really cannot replace Ryan McDonagh. I can't replace a Nick Frazier or a Jake Lyman or a Connor Newt. It's about replacing the ideas and the philosophies more than anything from now on. So that's how I feel about it. And quite frankly, it's reassuring to me now that we've got Spencer Stastny coming up the pipeline. We've also got Luke Shen, who, by the way, he may not be as great as McDonagh, but he's here and he provides that kind of dad mentality, kind of like Taylor Lewan did for the Titans. That's the way I look at it personally. He's not as crazy as Taylor, but I will say that's just my perception of what they lost and what's to gain from that. I know that we'll talk with Eric Erlinson coming up at 9:30 because he's covered that team for over 25 years. And so he knows the ins and outs of that franchise and what Ryan has done for them and why he might have gone back so easily. But Barry, to his credit, hey, he decided, let me do something good for a guy that's done so much for this game. So it's good. I want to hear what you guys have to think because you lose a crucial piece in the lineup with 26 mil to play with this summer. What do you do with that? What do you guys think that the Predators will be aware of this offseason?
Well, I will say this. Yesterday on Steel Money Company, Connor and Jake both heard me rant about the Preds in a roundabout way of saying they have a lot of draft capital. They don't need that draft capital because there's a lot of youth in Milwaukee. And so with that point being said, You can use a lot of that money that's open for cap space along with drafts and just conglomerate all that together. And
yeah, get those nine picks.
Yeah, and get a solid guy that's already established.
Yeah, there's 3 second rounds this year, 3 thirds, 2 fourths, then it goes down to the seventh. And the Predators owned, if you want to really know, they have 4 Tampa Bay Lightning draft picks in the next 3 years.
Mm.
Just for reference.
Including their first and second next year now, right?
Yeah, they've got the first next season in 25, a second this year, a seventh this year, and a second next year.
Wow.
Which is wild.
Keezer, I asked the guys yesterday, and we kind of talked about this. Barry Trotz said without saying fully that the Preds are going to have to go find a replacement for McDonough extrusively and go out and get someone. Who do you think out there on the market, or even via trade, who do you think the Preds would target?
It's a good question. I think immediate thought for me last week when this happened, the Predators have had, you know, a lot of trees on defense, the way that I want to put it, some good brutality on that blue line in years past. The way I look at it is there are a lot of things you could use to acquire a player via a trade, and I think it's going to be someone we're not talking about for sure. I can throw out every defenseman's name and I would hit on it, but we don't know, you know, what the target is here. I really like Nikita Zadorov just based on what he did to the Predators and the grit and the charisma that he brings to the lineup for his team, whether it was in Colorado or if it was in Calgary, wherever he's played, he's brought that mentality. He's brought that, hey, I don't care who you are, I'm going to run over you. And he scores goals. I mean, UC Saros got surprised a few times, for sure. So I like Brett Pesce from Carolina, another stout defenseman that could possibly be available. And I mean, if he hits free agency, the Predators could be a great landing spot for a guy like that. Those are two immediate guys for me, at least. And there's not too much that is going to for sure hit free agency. This does, to me at least, feel more like a trade that Barry will have to explore. That's just my opinion. It could be someone that they're looking around the league at from scouts. But you're not going to replace a 36, 35-year-old that did the exact same thing as him. There's just no way.
Quickly, Keezer, I can't remember if I heard you or maybe it was Willie who brought this up, but Brandon Montour from Florida, he had a big year under Andrew Brunette down there, and he's an impending UFA. So maybe that's a guy who you bring in who has proven success under Andrew Brunette and in this system?
Possibly. I liked him a lot when he was with the Ducks before he got traded. That was an interesting defenseman that I think Robbie even talked about too. I know that both of them, Willie and Robbie and Joe, have really hammered home on some of these guys that Andrew Brunette has either coached and whatnot. And I wouldn't be too surprised too. Even look at the Devils. You know, they've got some defensemen too that maybe Andrew would know a little bit. And so I'm sure that there's those conversations. And so one thing I really like about the idea with the guy down there in Florida, Brandon Montour, who's going to be UFA, and he's 30. He's a right-hand shot, too. And so on his last contract, I did find this interesting. I'm pulling it up now. But as a 30-year-old in the league, he's a former second-round pick. I mean, to me, if you're paying a guy, he's made about every year that he's signed a contract, he's made no more than $4 million. It's always been under that, which he fits within the budget easily. If you want a guy like that, that's great. He would definitely fit the mentality here in Nashville, I tend to think. Now, one thing that I would have to say about him is, what is he going to help you do offensively too? Is he going to play more on the PK? Is he going to play more on the power play? Because one season ago, guys, he had 73 points. So how does he fit into a new system? And think about that too. The 73-point year was when, I think that was Brunette's season in 22-23. Yeah. No, Paul Maurice was there. It was the year before. Sorry, 21-22 was Andrew Brunette. Brunette saw him hit 37, and then the next year hit 73.
So maybe better off without him.
Maybe. I don't know. But there's a lot to break down. There's a lot to think about right now. It's a lot of what ifs. And I will say, too, in part to this, it is interesting. I did ask Barry the day of the press conference what he would do with the future with some of the guys that are RFAs, restricted, where you still have their rights. You can tender qualify them. There's not had any conversations. There's not been anything yet. There's not been anything that I've heard either. There's not any wind on any contracts being done anytime soon. And Barry said some of these might go up until July 1st. So every RFA has their rights held until July 1st. So that's also the day of free agency. So don't get those two confused. You got free agency with the UFAs that don't get the contracts, and the RFAs, if they don't sign by July 1st, then they become those UFAs as well. So the Predators have a few. So who are those going to be? Possibly Kiefer Sherwood, not Spencer Stastny, but none of them have contracts. I'm just saying. Not to say that anyone's out, but hey, there are guys to be looking at here.
A lot of stuff to sort out for Barry Trotz over the next month or so. The first domino has already fallen. Ryan McDonough traded back to Tampa Bay. We have a veteran reporter of the Lightning, Eric Erlandson, who's going to join us next, talk all about that, what it means for the Lightning and also for the Predators. That's up next here on Four's Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Tune into 102.5 The Game this Sunday for coverage of the Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Coverage will begin at 4 p.m. The race starts at 5. Coverage also available on the 102.5 The Game app and at thegamenashville.com. Force Company, Saturday mornings here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Jake Lyman, Nick Kieser, Nick Frazier, and Connor Newt. And we are thrilled now to be joined by Eric Erlandson of LightningInsider.com, covering the Tampa Bay Lightning for the last 23 years. Eric, so glad to have you on. How you doing this morning?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, Eric. Appreciate you taking the time. Obviously, the big news this week between Nashville and Tampa Bay, Ryan McDonough traded back to the Lightning. Just want to get your initial reaction to the move as McDonough, who won two cups with the Lightning, comes back down there and looks to add a little bit more veteran presence to that room.
Yeah, I think caught a lot of people by surprise, especially when you factor in that the reason that the Lightning traded Ryan McDonough 2 years ago was because they were in a cap crunch. Well, they're still in a cap crunch. That hasn't changed. So to bring him back, I think, was a surprise, a pleasant surprise, though. He was such an integral part of the back-to-back championships and the three straight appearances in the Stanley Cup final. You know, you go back and you look at some of the highlights of those two championship seasons, and Ryan McDonough was right in the middle of some of those key moments, right? Like, he had the pass to set up Nikita Kucherov with 7 seconds to go, I think, in game three of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Islanders. He had a block shot and set up Brayden Point, for a breakaway in game one against the Panthers. He even had some Conn Smythe consideration in 2022. That's how key of a player, or 2021 rather, that's how key of a player he was. So to bring him back at a time where the Lightning were looking for a top four defenseman, I think that the timing was right in a lot of ways. And, I think a lot of people down here now especially have a lot more respect for Barry Trotz than maybe they had before. That's saying something, because McDonough did go to Barry and say, hey, if this ever materializes, if it's ever a possibility, I'd be willing to explore it. And sure enough, he made it happen.
Eric, along those lines, adding McDonough back to the Lightning, what addition to subtraction, what subtractions will the Lightning have to make from their roster coming up in the coming season?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Like I said, the cap crunch is still there. They have to re-sign Steven Stamkos, which I think is going to get done eventually before he reaches free agency. But to make that happen, you probably have to move somebody out. And if that's the case, the two likely candidates, simply because in an age where so many players have some sort of trade protection or no move clauses in their contract, the two guys that don't have it right now are Eric Chernak and Anthony Cirelli. And you hate to part ways with guys that have been key players for you. That was the case 2 years ago with McDonough. Those are the two candidates most likely to be looked at. I'm not saying that they have to trade one of those guys or they want to trade one of those guys, but if you're looking for salary cap relief, those are the areas you're going to look at just because of their contracts. But, you know, Julian Breeswell, the general manager here, told us when he spoke the other day about the trade is that they feel they have an adequate amount of space and everything else to make everything work this summer, including Steven Stamkos. I take him at face value, but you start to crunch the numbers and you wonder where that cap space is going to come from, because they only have 10 forwards under contract right now. Somebody's probably going to have to go. And if you're looking at prime candidates to open up some cap space, the two guys that everybody's going to look at are Chernak and Cirelli.
Eric Erlinson is with us. Nick Kieser here speaking with you now. Now, Eric, we know that there are 10 guys under contract that either have a full no move or a modified no move. So you are right. They're going to have to dance around some of those bigger pieces that they may not want to move, but they might explore. Now, under that regard, they need draft picks. Do you think they envision maybe dealing with a team that is on the rise? I mean, look what Columbus is doing. They've gone and, you know, said, hey, we want to get a new great GM here. So do you think it's a team on the rise that says, hey, we'll take on someone like that?
For sure. I'd even look at, the former Phoenix, Arizona, now Utah franchise, right? Like, the owner's come out and already said he's willing to spend money, probably to the cap. You know, so there's another place to look at, too, in terms of bringing that in. You're right. They don't have a lot of draft capital. They traded another second-round draft pick in the deal to acquire Ryan McDonough. So they don't have a first or a second. I don't even think they have a third going into this year's draft. They don't have a first or a second going into next year's draft. So they don't have those replenishing tools in terms of draft picks and younger players to bring in. So if you're going to, you know, bring some of that draft capital back, and they did that last year, right? They traded Ross Colton to Colorado for a second-round pick, turn that into Ethan Gauthier, who's in the Memorial Cup, playing right now. You know, so they have that ability. And you're right. I think that's where you would have to look for a team that wants to make a push up the standings, preferably not one in their division. I don't think you want to look towards Buffalo or Ottawa and strengthen those teams. So I would definitely look at, certainly to the West and maybe to the Metro Division to make that happen.
Absolutely. So, Eric, we've got Anthony Duclair, Tyler Mott, obviously Steven Stamkos, Austin Watson, by the way, a former Nashville Predator, and then you've also got on defense Calvin DeHaan, and then you've got Matt Dumba and Hayden Fleury. So out of how many of these guys, ballparking, you've kind of talked about the entire UFA class this summer, who do you think they actually try to keep? You know, a lot of those guys have the cultural value. Obviously, Duclair was a deadline trade, and then Austin Watson and Tyler Mott, they've just been those gritty guys in the lineup. So do you think there's anyone that they're trying to keep there for culture purposes? Because McDonough's one of them from Nashville, but do you think is there anyone else that will stay there, you think?
Well, yeah, we'll take Stamkos off that list because of fact that I'd find he's going to be back. I think they'd like to bring back Anthony Duclair. Again, it's a question of cost. He was a pretty good fit in the top six. I mean, he changed the way that their top six looked. That's why they got such a hot streak after they acquired him post-trade deadline and put themselves in position to make the playoffs when they were just kind of on the cusp. I think they'd love to keep Tyler Mott. Tyler Mott is a fantastic penalty killer. He's almost a prototypical third, fourth line type of forward who can do a lot of those hard things for you. You know, I think Tyler's probably going to be looking for a little bit more of a longer-term deal with more, a higher cap hit than what he got this year. Remember, he didn't sign until August this year. He was looking for more money in free agency. He didn't get it. I think it's hard to imagine them. I think they'd like to bring him back, but I think it's hard to imagine that. After that, those list of guys, I don't see a scenario where any of those other guys are coming back. I'm not going to rule it out, but I don't think it's going to happen. Hayden Fleury was here for a couple years. Was injured this year. He had opportunities to play with the injury to Mikhail Sergachev. Just couldn't stay healthy to get in there. Austin Watson didn't play a ton this season. Certainly a great locker room guy and the presence that he brings and when he's out there. But I think if you're going to look at guys they'd like to bring back outside of Stamkos, it's probably Duclair and Mott.
Eric Erlinson, 23-year veteran covering the Tampa Bay Lightning over at LightningInsider.com, is with us here on Forrest Company. Last one here for you, Eric. Just as an outsider looking in at this Nashville Predators team, we've kind of talked about how the core is getting a little bit older, but there are some young players on this team. How do you view this Nashville Predators franchise heading into this offseason and maybe the moves they could make to get themselves back to being towards the top of the Western Conference?
Well, I kind of look at them, and first of all, what's their goaltending future look like? I mean, they've been such a goaltending you know, just spitting out grade A goaltenders for years, right? Pecorine and going right into UC Soros. And now you have Askarov, you know, playing for Milwaukee and their run that they're doing in their postseason. That at some point that has to be decided, right? It's not too dissimilar to here a number of years ago when the Lightning had Ben Bishop, but they also had Andre Vasilevsky working his way up. And, you know, I mean, that's where things have to be settled at some point. You can't have – not too many teams are going to find the success the Bruins have had with an Allmark and a Swayman. At some point, I think you have to have, you know, the guy when you get to the postseason. So I think that has to be decided. But, yeah, I mean, look, Ryan O'Reilly is a great leader. I mean, he's fantastic defender. We saw him in the playoffs last year with Toronto and the difference that he made for the Leafs in winning that first-round series against the Lightning last year. Roman Josi, just one of the top players in the league year after year. Their core is a little bit like the Lightning's. Yeah, you have a couple of guys who are in their, you know, late 20s, early 30s that are on the other side of their careers at this point, but even though they're still very productive. And then you've got, the Evangelistas and those type of players who are younger players who can come in and contribute. And you need that balance. They were right there in that series with Vancouver, right? I think just a little bit more of a scoring pop, I think, probably puts them over the edge. We know they have the defensive awareness, the defensive acumen that they have. So I think if you just find maybe that one more top six forward that kind of gives them that extra push, that extra goal when you need it, I think that might be the difference for the Preds.
Eric, thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate your insights. Hope you have a great Memorial Day weekend. Thanks again for coming on.
Hey, my pleasure. Be well, boys.
Yeah, you too. Thank you, Eric. Yeah, great conversation. Lots of good insight on what to expect with Tampa's offseason. And then also, it was kind of interesting to hear him talk about the draft picks because when Nashville traded Tanner Janot, you know, they got a slew of draft picks. So Nashville obviously dealt McDonough back to Tampa Bay. Good to hear from Eric. He's been a guest on Behind Enemy Lines. I'm sure that he will be next year as well. So good insight. So looking forward to seeing what the offseason looks like down in Tampa because that's a lot of drama with Steven. But also, what does Nashville do with the empty hole on defense?
Eric Erlandson, again, from LightningInsider.com. Appreciate him coming on the show, talking some Preds and some Lightning after the trade of Ryan McDonough earlier this week. When we come back here on Force Company, it's time for Newt's Notes. Connor was in studio yesterday, so we got Ian's insights, but Newt's back in his rightful place. Coming up next here on Force Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Tune in to 102.5 The Game tonight as the Nashville Cats take on the Orlando Predators on the road. Pregame at 5:30, kickoff at 6 p.m. Coverage also available on the 102.5 The Game app and at thegamenashville.com. Cats football coverage presented by Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Force Company here on this Saturday morning. Jake Lyman, Nick Kieser, Nick Frazier. But you hear the music. That means it's time for Newt's Notes. Connor, the floor is yours.
Oh, yeah. L.A. Newt's back after a day off yesterday. All right, let me talk to you. So, recently, I've developed a minor nitpick with the SEC tournament going on. I've noticed it's kind of transpired across all college sports when we have an SEC tournament. So what drives me crazy is big teams like a Tennessee or a Kentucky or an Arkansas come into this tournament and they say, you know, we've already clinched. We don't really care if we win, all that. And then they go far. And then they realize, we're going to win. We want to win. Specifically, I'm talking about Tennessee here. It's driving me crazy. You cannot flip-flop like that. You go in one way or the other. You go in, we don't care. You go in all in. I don't care. But you cannot flip-flop when you lose. And if you lose, you can't say, well, I didn't care to begin with. And if you win, you can't say, well, I knew we were going to win. I wanted to win the whole time. It's just... I mean, I always put an asterisk in front of an SEC tournament anyway, because to me, the regular season title is kind of the big one. And then if you win the tournament, it's the SEC tournament title. It's not the SEC title to me. But I don't know. That just drives me crazy. I don't know what it is. It's so inconsistent to me.
So you go from regular season champs to conference champs. Is that what you're kind of talking about here?
If you win the regular season.
Well, what were the Cats?
They were the regular season champs.
And so how do you feel about their playoff hopes right now in the conference?
They're locked in. They're hosting.
Okay.
But
yeah, they were the number two team in the country coming in.
They're
yeah.
they're projected a one seed. I mean, maybe the number one overall.
So you don't
seed.
Feel any different about this coming into it?
I mean, I went in, I don't really care if we win. I'm the same way with basketball.
But you do care if they start winning, though.
But I do care if I start. So I guess I'm a victim of this.
You're
sometimes.
Contradicting oh yourself, yeah. big boy. You can't. Newt. You can't say that.
Well, I mean, I don't. The thing is, I don't do it when we lose. That's,
I get it.
That's I understand what Connor's saying, and I do feel bad. This is the second time we're going after Tennessee baseball fans today. But I have seen this too. After Vandy beat Tennessee, it was like 13-4 on Wednesday. All the Tennessee fans came out and said,
"Oh, it was bad.
Oh, we don't really care. We're going to be a top 2 or 3 seed overall in the tournament. Like, it's better to save our pitching." But now they threw Drew Beam, their Saturday starter, yesterday and beat Mississippi State. Yeah. And now it's like, oh, well, now we want to win the whole thing. It's like, all right, you got to – let's keep your story straight. Do you want to win, or were you not trying and you wanted to save your pitching?
Yeah, that's kind of the weird conundrum with fan bases. And I agree with your whole spiel here when it comes to fan bases that come out of their shell out of nowhere and they go – man, I really want my team to win. And then, like, you haven't done anything all year long, and, like, you just come out of your hole from, like, your house or your basement, and it's like, hey, I'm here now. So that happens. Now, does that happen for you being a Cardinals fan ever?
I mean, I was very diehard Cardinals fan since birth, and so now that they're losing, it's just, like, I'm accepting the fact that they're bad.
So what if they get better, though?
I mean, I'm gonna just ride it. I'm like, yeah, they're great again. Like, that's what I'm going to do. But I will say, for Newt's point, I'm going to just start coining it now. I'm going to call that a no-no Newt.
Oh, man.
That might be a bad dad little reference there.
No-no Newt?
Yeah.
What'd I do?
I just, like, you're a victim of your own, you know.
I mean, I am a victim of it to an extent.
Right.
But I'm not going to go out and, like, I just said, you got to go in one way or the other. You can't change it up. I heard it this morning that our friend in front before me, Parker Kelly, he said, well, we might as well win it now. I'm like, well, dude, you didn't care to start off, so you can't care now. Like, it's the same thing as, think about this, like the Predators, we all did it this past year. We didn't think the Predators were going to be good, and then they go on this 18 game point streak, and we're all, oh, they might be contenders.
I always knew they were going to be good.
Yeah, we all knew going into this season.
I think the team shocked themselves.
It's just, it drives, it's inconsistent, and we're all victims of it to an extent, but some are much worse than others.
Well, text us. I want to hear if any fans out there are listening and that they've ever come out of their shell. 615-737-1025. If you've ever been like, man, I want them to win, and then you haven't said anything all year, I want to hear you call yourself out, please.
Yeah, I do think baseball is the sport with the most fair weather fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
It kind of has to be. It's hard to dedicate yourself to a 162-game season if your team isn't good.
Yes.
Right?
I have one in mind.
Oh.
The year the Cubs won the World Series.
Oh, that's a great one.
Coming out of the woodwork.
Listen, I have a lot of friends and family, family friends, let's put it that way, that are big Cub fans, like massive Cub fans. And I'm just thinking, like, where did y'all come from? Like, one of my best friends, Matt, who's now out in Arizona, he's been a diehard Cubs fan since birth, probably. And, like, I knew that, you know, Cubs fan, he's just been in the woodworks. Like, they really do stink. And then, sure enough, they won the World Series. I'm like, hey, enjoy your time. But now they're going to go back to mediocrity. And sure enough, it's not that way. The Cardinals are the bottom of the barrel.
I saw that firsthand. I was in Chicago when they won the World Series.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was on a marketing trip. So shout out Hendersonville High School for those teachers for doing that. But no, I saw a lot of that. Like, we went to go get newspapers the next day, and man, it was nuts.
It's a cool story, but, like, you know, that's the number one thing about fans that are Cub fans. They just came out of the woodwork for that World Series year.
Well, it's over 100 years, too. Well, so.
And it's just tough. It's like being a fan of a bad football team isn't that hard. Because guess what? Let's say you're 0-4 after the first month of the season. You can dedicate 3 hours a week to go watch that team and say, hey, maybe there's a chance that they turn it around.
Are you speaking from experience, Jake?
I mean, I think everybody in the Nashville area understands that. I still watched almost every Titans game when they went 2-14 back in 16.
And 8-8.
Yeah.
Those rough years, like, oh, they're going to do it, and they just go 8-8.
Soon to be 9-9.
Like, being a football fan isn't that hard because guess what? If your team's bad, it's 3 hours a week.
Right.
But let's say you're a White Sox fan this year and your team starts 10-35. Like, am I going to dedicate 3 hours every single day to go watch the team that's going to lose 112
games? Hell yeah, brother.
No, I'm not. So I think baseball, even college baseball to an extent, is when you're going to get those fair weather fans who don't watch a single regular season game. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, Kentucky's in a regional?
Yeah.
I'll start watching this weekend.
It's baseball and basketball. Those are the two. Because people start getting into college basketball around, you know, late February, early March.
After the Super Bowl.
After the Super Bowl and the tournament is getting going. Mm. So if your team is in it, all of a sudden, oh, I'm a diehard Michigan State fan again.
Right.
I mean, it drives me crazy. And then baseball, everyone gets into it around this time, college-wise, and then once – hockey and basketball, NBA basketball, and it's on. So around June is when everyone will be diehard baseball again, and then we'll hit August, and it'll be NFL preseason, and everyone will go back to football mode.
I'll say I'm a victim of this. Like, for NBA, we're talking yesterday, like 20 of the 30 teams making the playoffs. I'm a Knicks fan, and, like, they actually were a 2 seed this year. I was like, oh, let's go Knicks. Like, hey, they're in the playoffs.
Yeah,
but like, you kept track of the team all season.
Yeah, I mean, I get the updates on my phone, but that's the thing is I'm not.
See, I used to be that way with the Tampa Bay Rays because that was the first baseball team that I ever loved growing up.
Bless your heart.
Yeah, really. That was the first true team.
The banner.
Yeah, that was the first true team that I ever followed in the majors. And then my second team was the Braves. My great-grandfather loved watching them. He used to get a six-pack of Coke, and he and I used to watch games as a kid.
That's
so that,
awesome.
That was a lot of fun. But there are those fair weather moments, I think, for a lot of fans. And quite frankly, Nashville, I would say this. They exist. I don't think it's as heavy as it truly is in Nashville. Think about when the Predators almost lost the team. Think about how many people came out and said that they had been going for years and years and years. You want to have the camaraderie in a city. So whether you're a fair weather fan or not, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're there, you're there.
Teams need fair weather fans.
They do. Yeah, absolutely.
You only have so many diehards. That's why the saying is, like, if you win, they'll come. It's like, a lot of people are fair weather and aren't going to come if your team's not very good. So you need fair weather fans. But I understand what Connor is saying, that, hey, if you're going to go into the SEC tournament and say, let's just go 0-2 and save our pitching, don't change up. If your team wins a couple of games,
they'll be a chump.
And this isn't directed directly at Tennessee.
No, like
they're
I said,
just the ones who have said it.
We're all victims. Yeah. I've done it before. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I say golf fans are victims every Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Like, everybody's like, oh, this guy's going to win. I want this guy to win. Like, nah, just pick your guy. Mm. Stick with him all year.
And know his name before you say it.
Xander Schauffele.
Xander Schauffele. Oh, my gosh. I saw him.
Winner of the PGA Championship.
Yeah, I saw him
last
week.
Who I called. I got that correct.
I think you said Schauffele, not Schauffele.
Schauffele.
Yeah, so Schauffele.
Xander Schauffele.
Just like DQ'd immediately. Oh, my goodness. Off the rails.
Newt's Corner has been canceled.
No, never.
Never.
We will always have Newt's Notes. 615-737-1025. You can text or call us. Force Company on this Saturday morning. 1 hour down. In our second hour, we're going to talk a little more college baseball. We've had a lot of college baseball talk today, but we're going to talk some more as the SEC semifinals start today. And then next week, we get regionals, which is one of the best college sports weekends of the year. We're also going to dive deep into Nick Kieser's wedding tomorrow and much more. That's up next. Hour number two of Four's Company coming up here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.